Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures with Paul Booth. So happy for you today. I am beyond excited. I'm literally trying to keep myself from getting too excited. Today's guest, Alexa Foreman, we're going to be discussing her documentary, her feature-length documentary that will be premiering at the Turner Classic Movies Film Festival. So this episode is also for the Turner Classic Movies Film Festival. Then we've been celebrating women directors with a female filmmaker Friday series. So this is also for that. Then this is also just to support Alexa, who is a great friend of the show, actually named the show, is a mentor, associate, friend, all that stuff to myself. And we're going to get into some interesting discussion here about this documentary that Alexa made that you guys can check out at Turner Classic Movies on Friday, April 27th, this week, 8 p.m. in the Roosevelt Hotel. Those of you that don't know, that was the first place that had the Oscars 90 years ago. The film is titled Scandal, The Trial of Mary Astor. Now, before I get into discussing the film, like the usual talk hosts that do, rather than having the director discuss it, I always love that when you see those shows. And let's see, I think our guest is calling in here. Welcome, Alexa. Are you with us?
Yes, Paul.
Yes. Hello. Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, perfectly.
So I was trying to figure out which TCM festival did we meet? Was it the first one or the second one?
No, it was the second one because I had moved here like 5 days before the first one.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So it was in 2011.
Yes. Yeah.
So I've known you 7 years.
Yes, crazy. So weird how time flies, huh? And you
yeah.
being a researcher, I was thinking about that the other day, and I actually came across your business card in pristine condition in my drawer. So I was like, wow.
Well, I've got a new business card for you now that I'll hand you when I see you for my production company. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. A company too. I was just telling the audience that this is for obviously TCM, but more importantly, your film, and then also that we've been doing this Friday female filmmaker thing, and with you, how we'll get into it later with how you've, you know, authored books about women in film and all that stuff. But as I did my follow-up, well, first of all, I would love to hear just from your point of view what the film is about, your synopsis, the director's synopsis.
Well, this is concentrated on maybe 2 months of actress Mary Astor's life. And one day somebody will do the definitive Mary Astor biography, and it needs to be done. I mean, documentary. It needs to be done. She had an incredible life. But this is just about the scandal that surrounded her when her ex-husband stole her diaries, two volumes of her diaries. She'd kept diaries since she was a little girl, and we cover that in the doc. And these diaries he took had very, very intimate details of an affair she had been having with playwright George S. Kaufman after they met in New York City. Excuse me. And the husband threatened to release the diaries to the press if she didn't do what he said. And she said, no, I'm going to go through with this trial. I want to get custody of our child, of my child, Marilyn, back from you, and I'm going to do this. So it's mainly about the trial. The other thing that was happening in her life those same 2 months was she had been cast in a movie titled Dodsworth, directed by the wonderful William Wyler, co-starring Walter Huston, and that would be John Huston's father and Angelica Huston's grandfather. So not only was she making, this was the best role she'd been offered, and Paul, she started in silent pictures at age 14. She was pushed into that by her father, who is covered in the doc. He was pretty brutal. But she gets this wonderful role, and she's filming Dodsworth during the day and then going to court at night. And the press is everywhere. She actually lives on the lot while she's making the movie because she cannot go home.
Oh.
So it's about that and how she used her character, Edith Courtright, in the movie to get her through the trial. Whenever she was on the stand, she sort of absorbed Edith Courtright and became very calm, sophisticated, unwavering, confident, and she used that to get through the trial.
Well,
so
now, of
that's
course,
basically what it's about.
Well, now, of course, just for general audience, of course, Walter Huston is also the go-to for him would be Treasure of Sierra Madre, and of course, William Wyler would best be known to general audience for Ben-Hur. But I was now the question that I really found interesting here as I was going through Wikipedia, this discussion and idea of Samuel Goldwyn being urged because there was a morality clause. Did you have any inkling or idea that, I mean, you started this out and this is like the perfect, I mean, Hollywood is now a storm of morality. So how is that for you as a director to have made something and then all of a sudden you're like landing on the freeway of morality? How is that hitting you as a filmmaker?
It really dovetails nicely. I mean, in the documentary, you'll see that she is called to this extraordinary meeting after she films her last day on Dodsworth, and it's her best scene in it. And amazingly, Paul, back to William Wyler, he took 50, 75 takes. I mean, he would just say, okay, again, and again, and again. And he was known for that. And on this day, she did the scene once, and he said, that's great. And she said, what? And she walked over to him and asked him, is that right? Is that okay? And he said, yeah, it's fine. You'll see. And she's called in this amazing meeting with Sam Goldwyn. By the way, he is the producer of Dodsworth, so that's why he's there. Louis B. Mayer, Irving Thalberg, they were big executives over at MGM. Harry Cohn, the head of Columbia. Jack Warner was there. He was head of Warner Brothers Studio. And then Jesse Lasky, who was involved with Paramount. And they told her to drop the suit. And it just hit me when we were editing. This is amazing. This is a woman who's being told by the industry she has to do something. And she says no. And so I think it's amazing, and it's exactly what's going on now, women standing up. And I mean, she was an employee. They were, you know, they could have blackballed her right away.
Right, and of course, as you know, but for audience, I mean, this is the studio system time. I mean, like you're saying, this was not where the way now Jennifer Lawrence can do a Paramount movie or a Lionsgate or you're saying, this was, you were at Warner's, you were possibly at Warner's till you died. And then also, yes. I mean, I'm so intrigued by someone that, you know, survives silence to talkies. And then those names you just listed, I mean, that book, The Genius of the System, that I remember when I read that just blew my mind. When the first time I ever learned that early cinema was, these filmmakers were just stuck or would have to do deals of you could like, as you know, but I'm just saying for audience of, well, I'm going to let Alexa work for you for three pictures and you need to give me this actor, or change contracts. Or I believe there's something Henry Fonda had to agree to something with to do Grapes of Wrath that was like really weird with his contract. But with your film, I also wanted to let people know a little bit more about Alexa. We all love Turner Classic Movies. We all miss your friend, Mr. Osborne. Those intros that we all loved before the movies, Alexa was a key part, a very key part, researching, writing, editing scripts, sometimes even producing and directing segments. And so in a way here, we have a guest that to some degree has influenced almost all of us if we've ever sat down and enjoyed the TCM, the Classic Movie Channel. She's worked with Meryl Streep, Anthony Hopkins. Her film is narrated by Oscar winner Lee Grant for Shampoo. She interviewed seven of the original Munchkins for her documentary Memories of Oz, which I forget, was that the 50th year or 60th year box set of Wizard of Oz?
You know what? I think, wouldn't that have been the 75th?
Oh, that's right.
Because
it was
1939,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. I remember that now. That's that beautiful box. It came with a, because I remember when I met you, I had gotten that for my mom, like not even a year before. And Alexa also, since we're talking about women and the dynamic of film, she authored a book, Women in Motion, which I have on my office desk. TCM Archives from 2004, as well as a contributor to Leading Ladies, Leading Men, and Leading Couples. She's really just like this textbook of film history. She's so great to talk to because living in Los Angeles, if someone knows as much as you, which I'm yet to meet someone, they're way up in
no,
the clouds.
No, you've met Leonard.
Leonard
Maltin.
That's right,
he knows
that's
more.
Right. Right. They're way up in the clouds and you're down still living on the land. You graduated with honors in film and English from Holland University, and she managed the American Film Institute's theater in Washington, D.C., and the Rhodes Theater in Atlanta. And also she was at TCM for 20 years and is now working there as a freelance researcher and is executive producing this documentary. So this is really cool, and I've been letting people know that this episode was going to be a place to also get history and filmmaking. So also in this film, for you film lovers, you'll get interviews with Leonard Maltin. And this is David Wyler. So this is William Wyler's son, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah. I guess what my question would be, because I know you've known Mr. Maltin for a while, have you known Mr. Wyler's son for a while, or how was that? Was that like getting to meet someone new and going into a new scope of things?
No, I met him at the festival, of course. When you and I met, we were in the VIP room. I mean, that's my favorite room, the VIP room at Grauman's. And it's up above the theaters. And, you know, we got to go in because you had a press pass. And I, you know, they asked me the first year was 2010, and they organized a film festival, and we didn't think much of it. And we went out there and we were so busy. It was unbelievable. But they asked me to go to convince Louise Reiner, who was, I think, 99 or 100 then. She was the first woman to win back-to-back Oscars, and for Good Earth and The Great Ziegfeld. And they wanted her to get up and do the live show with Robert Osborne. And they asked me, they knew I was good with talent because I'd run the archival project where we interview older stars and editors, writers, from the industry. And so I was sent out basically to do that and also to make sure Leonard Maltin got to where he was supposed to go. He would introduce movies or shorts or cartoons or just speak. So, so that was 2010. And because you had a press pass and I had the all-access pass to take Leonard around, that's when we met. And then I imagine it was 2 years ago, they were doing a Wyler, showing several Wyler pictures. And I think it was, I'll try to think of the name of the picture. It's unbelievable. And it has Walter Houston in it. And so the Wylers were there. I believe it was David and one of his sisters, their three children. And I met him then. And I contacted him when I was making, it took me 2 years to make this documentary using my own money. And I thought, we really need somebody that can talk about Goldwyn, Wyler, and this movie, Dodsworth, because it's such an unusual movie. It's not the usual 30s picture where, and remember, you'll know, Paul, but the audience may not know, when the Hollywood production code came in after three very scandalous events in Hollywood, the Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle scandal, William Desmond Taylor's murder, and Wallace Reed, a silent actor who got hooked on drugs and died because of that. That was huge, and they initiated the production code. But the production code didn't really get any teeth or traction until 1934. That's why you'll see pictures like Tarzan and his mate showing nude scenes and King Kong showing King Kong biting people in half and all of that stuff. Well, all that was abolished or cut out after 1934. So Dodsworth is not your normal 30s sophisticated picture, because normally Mary Astor's character is a divorcee. Walter Houston is in a bad marriage and they start a relationship. And normally in the 30s pictures, excuse me, one of them would have to be killed or go to prison. They couldn't carry on that kind of relationship.
A place in the sun.
The letter with Betty Davis having the affair and then getting it in the end. So it's most unusual, very sophisticated, and that's what I wanted David for. And he said, well, you realize I wasn't alive at that time. And I said, I know that was 1936. But I said it would really help give credence, and that's why I picked the seven people I interviewed for the doc. They all give it credence. If Leonard had said no, he's now a good friend, a good, good friend of mine. He said yes. Molly Haskell, the film critic, said yes. Kevin Thomas, Robert Osborne's good friend, Robert said, I said, I need a reporter who can talk about the LA Times back then. He said, get Kevin Thomas. Kevin Thomas said yes. Then I found a lawyer, Ken Bass, who could talk about the trials, the ins and outs. I got a forensic psychiatrist, Tracy Marks, who's local, to talk about this horrendous life that Mary Astor had. She started off with her parents pushing her into pictures, using her as a money machine. Her first husband, Kenneth Hawks, the brother of Howard Hawks, who we know for Red River, Bringing Up Baby, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. He had a brother, Kenneth. Well, she married him, and he was killed almost immediately directing a film in a plane. He died in a plane crash. So then we go into the second marriage to Franklin Thorpe and that. So, I mean, she had an amazing life. Also, the main person I was able to interview was Marilyn Rowe, who is Mary Astor's daughter, still around, okay. And she was gracious and let me come to her house and film. Now, if she'd said no, that would have been it, I think. But everybody said yes. Most people did it for free. So great. just so great. And that's TCM, of course, has been a huge factor in my life because I've gotten to be friends with these people. So to answer your question, that's how I met David.
Well, and for the audience, also the production code, I mean, I don't think,
I don't
even know if we would have five films in the cinema if the production code existed. And I don't know where it fell. Alexa, please let me know. I remember in The Genius of the System, they talked about, and we obviously won't get into religion, but the Catholic decency.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
There was all these
Oh, yeah.
Different people. So you would not see anything remotely like today. So for if anyone's listening to this and they think, oh, Scandal, divorced woman, well, what's that? This is definitely the context of a time where, like you were saying, it was beyond a no-no. And so this is very, and Molly Haskell, let's see, this says she must, let's see, she's almost 90.
No, Marilyn, the daughter.
No, for Molly Haskell. Molly Haskell says she's born in 30.
Oh, yeah, no, Molly. Oh, no, Molly's not that old. No, she's in her 70s. She was married to Andrew Saris.
Okay.
And you'll know Andrew Saris, the extraordinary film critic. I believe he started the auteur theory. I'm not sure about that, but I know he had opinions about that. And I met him several times through Molly. And I got to know Molly through TCM, of course. She narrated my King Vidor piece. And we got to be friends. And when I went up to New York, I took my mom and introduced my mom to Molly and Andrew. I mean, it was so great. So I've stayed in touch with her. And when I go to New York, I see her. In fact, when I got Lee Grant's voice put on voice recorded up in New York, I stopped by that night and had dinner with Molly. And you know, Paul, so many people have said, well, you worked at TCM, of course they're going to show your documentary. No, they rarely show documentaries at the film festival.
I was going to say, please explain that, because I was going to touch on so we've been doing in this series, we've been talking to women about the differences they face in filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
I know you personally, so I know you earn everything. But yeah, please explain with where you were going with that point about TCM and documentaries.
Well, I think the only documentary I saw out there at the festival was the one on Baby Peggy. And if you please, audience, if you get a chance to see it, it's called The Elephant in the Room. And it's all about this silent star who was big. And yet we don't know her very well today, but luckily they've got a lot of her films restored and you can see it. She's still alive. And she talks about her family. And, you know, it was one of those sad Hollywood stories again, where the parents took advantage and, you know, anyway. So that's the only one I've ever seen out there at the festival. And actually, that's the only movie I've seen out there at the festival, because when you're escorting somebody like Leonard, you pick them up, you take them to where they're to be. They may be on a panel before the movie or after the movie. They may just introduce the movie. You know, Leonard's an expert on Disney. So he would probably introduce, we did Lady and the Tramp. And then he would always say, let's stay a minute and watch, look at the print. Because he was always interested in the condition of the, whether it was 35 or digital or 70 millimeter. And he knows all the projectionists too, which I love. So
yeah, you know, I love it. I love what you're saying. This is very special for you, having a documentary, because the only documentary I can think of that they showed in all the years that I've been or covered it through just reviews and shows was that Richard Zanuck one. It's backwards. His dad used to say, don't tell me no, don't tell me yes until you're
done talking. Don't say no until I stop talking, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, being not wanting yes men around him. And I remember when that came on TCM, watched it, recorded it, watched it again the next day. I thought that was such a brilliant thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys made And the Oscar Goes To, and that didn't even show at a festival. So it's like, this is a really special thing. Audience, to have a context here of, if they don't show their own documentaries, that you're getting to see something here. Now, I'll tread lightly, because I know it's only been a year, so whatever you feel comfortable with mentioning about your friend, do we get the chance to see him in the film? Was he?
But he's a consultant. It's dedicated to him. It starts off with a quotation from him. No, he was due to be interviewed the week he died. So I believe his last interview is in Bombshell, the Hedy Lamarr story, which is out now. And Paul, I haven't had the heart to see it. I'll finish quickly on TCM. That was my goal in the back of my head. I knew I wanted it to be an hour and no more, and not her whole life. Like I say, just this diary and the scandal and all of that. And did she make it through? Did she have a career after that? How did she survive? So I approached Charlie Tabish, the head of programming, and Stephanie Thames, also in programming. And I said, if I could get this done by January, would you look at a rough cut and see? And they said, well, we don't normally show documentaries. So it wasn't a given in any way. And when I finally took it in to show it to Stephanie, oh my God, Paul, it had my voice on it. I mean, it was just dreadful, you know, because I hadn't gotten Lee Grant's narration put on it. And I knew if they said, no, it's not really good enough, I thought I had to stop the project. I just couldn't spend any more money on it. But Stephanie was very game. She sat there with me. We watched it on my computer. I sent a link to Charlie. Stephanie said she liked it a lot. And by the time I'd gotten home, I had an email from Charlie saying, well done. This is a subject I knew nothing about. We'll fit it in and support it however we can. So it's not in a theater, but it's at Club TCM, which, as you know, is in the Hollywood Roosevelt.
Yes.
And it's the Blossom Room, which is where the first Oscars were held in 1929. So I think Mary Astor would really like that. Back
oh,
drama.
Yes.
Yes. He and I talked about this. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, no. What I was going to just say real quick before I closed her page was Molly Haskell, for all the women out here, and we're definitely going to continue with what Alexa's saying, but she wrote a very influential book called From Reverence to Rape, The Treatment
yes.
of Women in Movies. So right now,
absolutely.
With all that's going on, I'm going to actually go to my library this week and see, or tell my librarian to order it. Originally in 1974, revised and reissued in 87. So again, From Reverence to Rape, The Treatment
right.
of Women in
yes.
Movies. This could not
and
be a more perfect book.
Her latest book, Paul, is on Steven Spielberg.
Oh,
we'll have
okay.
to get that.
See, I love this. I love Molly Haskell. So I have never heard of this book, and I think it's something I'm gonna post to Facebook. I'm gonna mention in the next couple of shows. I know about 50 different female guests we've had that would put it into all the directing female groups that are going on around the world. So.
You should get Molly on the show, Paul. You should get Molly on your show.
We're open for anything. When we started talking, however far the clouds go, we're all the same. And I let the audience know before you came on that you named this show. So this really is a celebration for you. You were just finishing with one last point on, or you were saying something
Robert.
About Mr. Osborne. I was teetering on whether or not to bring it up, but I just know that
of course it was
part of the film. And so we're now, one question that we love to ask each director is, for you personally, not as a filmmaker, historian, or researcher, was there something where you kind of came to the end of the day and you thought to yourself, you know what, I would have never learned this about myself or life had I not been doing this project. Like, I just got a huge gift.
You know, the more I see it, and of course, you know, sure, you know, from editing, you can get very tired of seeing the same thing over and over and over again. But you've got to. You've got to fit everything in. You've got to add the music. You got to do the sound design. And it's taught me so much about mothers and daughters. And it comes down to a mother fighting for her child. It's got so many more layers. To me, a good documentary has always got to have three themes running, like in Sherman's March, where his mother's trying to get him to date. He's desperate to meet Burt Reynolds, and the Civil War. He's got three things going there. You know, and Errol Morris does that too, I believe, has three subplots running at the same time. And I keep finding different layers in this. You know, not only the industry, scandal, morality, but a mother and a daughter. It's so interesting, and I think there are other levels. I think people will come away with different impressions, but that to me was, I was so happy when, and it's not really a happy ending for this, and I actually talked to Lee Grant about that. I said, not quite sure how to end this, and she said, right now you're in love with this project. You got to give it up. You got to tell it as it's supposed to be told. So I think I learned a lot about mothers and daughters, and also that I had to end the documentary the real way it was. Not that I wouldn't have, but she had to remind me of that, that you've got to tell the truth. So I guess that's how I'd answer that.
That's interesting, yeah, because, I mean, that's definitely a layer upon layer, and then layers with when someone loses their mother or if they have whatever their relationship was, or especially in
and that
business.
Your mother's in the spotlight constantly.
I mean, she was a public figure. Well,
and,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I asked Marilyn, I said, is it okay if I ask you these questions? I mean, it's her parents' divorce. It's not a pleasant subject, and she was great. Just great. She's
right,
a wonderful person.
It's not like you're just sitting around talking movies.
No, exactly. And she never saw a movie with her mama either. You know, I said, would you guys watch movies together? No. So, okay.
Interesting.
Well, you got to remember there wasn't any television. There weren't VCRs. There weren't, you know, but she never went to a screening room to watch one. She was on the set several times. She has stories about that, but that's for a different documentary, I think.
Well, that always intrigues me. I always wonder where people, because we both know such film lovers, like I hadn't seen my dad for like 9 months last year, and we used to go to the movies every Tuesday night and sometimes and Wednesday. And when it came to Christmas, we saw like movies six nights in a row, and he wanted to go a seventh. And I was just like, you know, if even I don't want to go to a movie, that's like weird. And he was like, we didn't even see 10 movies this year. He's like, we've seen five in a month before. And then I thought, oh, okay. I thought, now I see what you're, that whole bringing together, that's interesting to hear. So this documentary, feature length,
it's an hour and 2 minutes.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, I'm so happy.
I had to get the credits in there. So the 2 minutes of the credits. There you are. And you're in the credits.
I'm in the credits.
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you. I don't know what to say. That's fantastic. Well, I'm – this is a really cool – I always tell people that we have the great pleasure on this show of – being able to go to festivals in other states and go to festivals that are mid-level and high up or new festivals. And we understand, especially as filmmakers, that you have to market and you have to network, or some festivals are about the deal. And TCM is such a blast because Not that you're happy that most of the people that you're seeing on the screen are obviously gone because they were in a 1942 Best Picture, but no one's hounding you for press. No one's trying to get their deal. No one has their agent on the phone screaming at them because they didn't close. And so it's just this kind of, has Alexa, of course, as you were saying, behind the scenes, you've seen the enormous growth. And for myself as someone that attends, I mean, it's just so great to just kind of, you look forward and then someone behind you says, oh no, it was 2 Oscar nominations. And then you turn around and you're just kind of like talking across the line with somebody and then they're mm-hmm. throwing out, did you ever see their early work? And that is what's so fantastic is like, it, to me, it's kind of just like a big living room movie watching party. It's just spread out through the Egyptian yeah. and bands. And I refuse to call it TCL. It's always going to be Grauman's to me, but
right. Absolutely.
And then, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and then you go to the club, the Roosevelt Hotel is so wonderful. And they have the lobby is just packed and there's just this, it's just so wonderful.
Yeah,
now,
it's just really for the love of movies. It's not for the art of the deal or anything. It's love of movies. And a lot of them are restored. A lot of them have just been, you know, discovered again. I believe they're going to show Creature of the Black Lagoon in 3D.
Yes.
And that's so wonderful because now people who've seen The Shape of Water can see what the director loves so much about that.
Right. And well, here's where I had my first time ever feeling kind of really it's at the Classic Movie Film Festival was how Bull Durham's playing. Because I went, wait a minute,
yeah.
I used to watch that when I was a kid. I thought that was one of the first baseball movies I saw, and I love baseball. So I just remember thinking, there's baseball in movies? And I go, Bull Durham, how can that be playing with Strangers on a Train and Witness for the Prosecution? And then I go, oh, I guess that was 30 years ago. So that's what's
yeah.
really cool about Turner Classic Movies is that now it's starting to have not just movies that you say were your grandpa's movies or your grandma's movies. It's having something that spans multi-decades. And there's also these interesting panels. I mean, one really cool thing that I think it's really great. I'm sure they planned this perfectly before your film, the Writers Guild, that they're going to have that panel about women writers and what women are going through in the business. And Callie Khoury, who got an Oscar for Thelma and Louise. So I thought that was fantastic when I saw the schedule. I thought this is great. A woman director having a premiere in this great historic building, and you have an Oscar winner in your film. And don't worry, I won't start talking about Hal Ashby. I'll stick with Shampoo.
Oh, yeah. But there's a new documentary on Hal Ashby. There's
oh, really?
There's a new doc out on him. Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
I think it's
okay.
Just called
Hal. Oh, okay. Thank you for telling me that. I'll definitely Google that because Alexa knows my love for 70s movies can take the train way off the track.
Yes.
In as a director in shaping your documentary, your style, is there anybody that you would like that was your favorite kind of documentarian or somebody that liked the way like your director's influence or?
I just love documentaries. I do love Errol Morris. I think he's extraordinary.
Oh, yeah.
And
yes.
he started way back when, and he's invented that camera that the person being interviewed looks straight at you. You know, it's not the off-camera look where they're looking to the side. He's invented that camera that when he's interviewing someone, when they're answering the question, they're staring directly at you. Anyway, he did all those. He did the Thin Blue Line, so many great things. I think
I want to say Fog of War. I think he got an Oscar for that, right? And that was that one tripped me out because that was Robert McNamara, of course, the Kennedy's brothers, and he was one of the only guys involved in stopping the Bay of Pigs. And that was, I remember, that was the first time I saw that tactic. And it was really creepy to have a guy look at you and say, yes, I've committed war crimes.
No, it
you're
was
like,
really
huh?
And it, yeah, yeah. And he did short docs that were on the TV too. One about the, I think it's called the Muter Museum. And that curator stares right at you as she's telling you things. Anyway, I didn't go as far as that. But what I do like is a documentary that keeps you engaged, has three themes running through. And in the For Aster, it's nonlinear. So you got to pay attention because we start off with the Maltese Falcon. And we do that. I don't know why I say we. I do that because that's how most people will know Mary Astor today. And I followed that from a TV documentary I saw on PBS. I think it's called Finding Lucy. And it was all about Lucille Ball. And, of course, they start off with I Love Lucy. And that's what you've got to do. You can't just start off with the trial in 1936. Because you don't know who this woman is. Why would you care? And so I start off with a snippet about Maltese Falcon and the Great Lie, and then start in on her first marriage, the death of the husband, and then meeting the second marriage, the second husband, Franklin Thorpe, and how that marriage went bad. Then we go to the trial, and you know a little bit about her at that point. And as Lee Grant and her assistant, her good friend Roberta said to me, you got to care about her before she fails. And that's so true. You can't just start on the trial. And because why would you care that this famous movie star is trying to get her daughter back? You know, you don't care for her at all. So, and then during the course of that, when we get ready for the trial, then I mentioned Dodsworth and we go to that and we have a clip of that and show that. And then it bounces back to her parents suing her when she's younger because she stops. They gave her an allowance of $5. This is still when she was she was a teenager and growing. She finally had to stop it. They were taking all her money. So it does that. Then we go back to the trial. So you have to pay attention, but it's all sectioned out. I love documentaries that are in pictures, and you can follow that way. And that I discovered from Finding Lucy. And then my documentaries, I've only done two now, but mine tend to be interview-driven, which is we go from Molly, we go to Leonard, we go to Kevin Thomas, and then we go to maybe Lee Grant, giving you more structure, a couple of sentences. Then we go to something else, but it's always interview to interview to interview. So it's very cinematic. It's not, yeah, go ahead.
Well, and Leonard Maltin, I know what you had brought up when we met. At that point, that was the second festival I'd ever covered. I had only been writing DVD, a classic DVD column, and then I, for 6 months I did theatrical reviews, as you know.
And you'd made a movie then too, hadn't you? Made your movie then?
Yeah. Oh yes. I've been fortunate. I have four features on Prime, and they're just B movie. You know, I call them C movies. So for me, because you know they're just action horror stuff. And so for me, it was Leonard Maltin was like that growing up for me, was that like Roger Ebert, Leonard Maltin. And so it was kind of like, I remember, and I just love this story. Whenever I tell people, they just laugh. I remember when we met that I told you, you know, Leonard Maltin was being mobbed, of course, that I said, oh, I don't want to go up to him, I said. And then sometimes handlers can be, you know, something along the lines of a hassle. And then I said, oh, what do you do? And you said, I'm handling Leonard Maltin. So it was like, oh, you know, so it was like, oh, I guess popcorn flavored shoe is in my mouth. And so I just
get out of here. You're bothering me.
So I always admired that you could that the way we met kind of started off with like you knew an insult that wasn't directed at you. But I
know
this is because and back to what we were saying about documentaries, I've found this obsession with I love to find documentaries like about a sport that I don't like, and I like to see how they can snag me. And I caught myself watching like 4 or 5 hours of this 12 episode football documentary, and I couldn't watch a game unless it was like the Super Bowl, because who wouldn't go to the Super Bowl? And I was just totally enthralled. And I thought sometimes that technique, I think, is amazing when you can get someone to like, of course, Ken Burns, he's so amazing. Obviously, you know, we're not real excited that his Vietnam War documentary is coming out, but it'll still be intriguing. And like jazz, to do a 10-hour documentary and have people that don't like swing music watching 2 hours about swing music. So I was really intrigued, because I remember after I met you, I came right home and we watched your the Wizard of Oz documentary and loved that. So we're very excited about this, Alexa, that we get to see this, and especially in that building. And I think it's just a nice circle for how you and I met across the street and the show. And again, for guests, we're coming up on 4 years of this show in about 4 months. People endlessly say they like the name of the show. We even have we haven't used it yet, but we even have one of the most famous actors ever, Oscar winner. Yes. Saying to me when I interview him that he likes the name. It totally threw me off. I giggled because I thought, I can't wait to tell Alexa, but it was like, I just went blank. I had no question, but I thought, I got to come up with something. So yeah, so it's really been something that has snagged people that and it was really great of Alexa to do, because I know she was alluding to that they used to be called Pictures, and you'll still see some directors that occasionally Scorsese's. And so that's what I wanted to close with was, I know there's that bittersweet of you're having your film premiere and then you're seeing that they're going to have a award in your friend's name. And so how does that feel, just knowing that it's going to go to somebody? Not that we're Scorsese fans, not that his films are so great, but someone who has worked tirelessly for preservation, and film stock, and all that. Yeah, and so many people don't, you know, I'm not saying in a snobby way, but so many people don't know that. I'm like, oh no, he like boycotted Kodak in the 70s, and like, you know, he's spoke in front of Congress, like, he's not just the guy who made Raging Bull. So how was that for you when you first heard that was going to happen? What kind of emotion did you feel?
Well, I think it's a good idea. And, you know, the fans, they loved Robert so much. And I remember the first festival, this past festival, people kept saying, I'm not sure if I want to come back, you know? So... but I think once they get back together and we start talking about him, then you feel like, oh, wait, these are the people I can talk about Robert with. I got to come back. Plus, you know, we've got all those intros and outros, you know, what, 23 years of them, 22 years of them. And so you know what his favorite movies were. And, you know, he says it. He says it in the intro. So when a movie like that's playing at the film festival, like Laura or Dodsworth or Leave Her to Heaven or The Razor's Edge, it just makes it that much better. Yeah, but he likes Scorsese a lot. In fact, we had to learn that it is pronounced Scorsese, you know, and that's one thing we were sticklers for on TCM is getting the correct pronunciations of names. Yes. And He loved seeing movies in a theater, and he loved restoration and all of that. So I think he'd be thrilled that Scorsese is getting the award.
Yeah, you know, just real quick on The Razor's Edge, the first time I saw that was at TCM Festival, and they had kind of had Mr. Osborne standing in the dark, and he came out, and everybody, like, got excited, and I looked at my dad, and he was kind of, like, shaking like a little kid, and then I looked back, like, a minute later, and I was like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine, and I'm like, your hands are shaking, like, I thought he was, like, having a seizure or something, and he was just, he literally couldn't contain himself, just that he was hearing a live intro, and then Mr. Osborne came and actually sat behind us. I said, Dad, don't turn around, the movie's starting, and it was just such a great kind of just bow tie gift, and later my dad saw him and shook his hand and said, thank you, and of course, you know, Mr. Osborne, he was so kind, and I, of course, you know, I use the bathroom, and Robert Osborne's, my dad gets to meet him. So it was kind of funny. I was like, you what? I'm like, you were talking to Robert Osborne when I chose to use the bathroom. So, yeah. So we're again, just so excited, for you, Alexa. And we're so happy that we're going to see you. Mom's going to come out.
Well,
and
it's funny, Paul, cause it's full circle now, you know. I used to escort Leonard. Who's going to escort me this year? I'm now a special guest. I've got my bio up on the website and my picture. And, you know, I have to have somebody to escort me.
Maybe yes.
Leonard can.
Oh, right. Maybe Scorsese can.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if he's a nice handler.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That would just be the funniest gag if you could actually pull it past fans and if people didn't act the way they did. I gotta handle Alexa. I can't talk right now.
Right.
But yeah, we appreciate you coming on, even though you're family in the movie world to us and your family through the show, and you're a close dear friend. And I will of course make sure you get this show once all the audio stuff gets done. But thank you for doing the show today, and you're number 292, and you were also, I think, episode 5, so it's just fantastic.
That's fantastic, and Paul, you're so sweet to have me on, and for anybody that's going to be in L.A. on Wednesday before the festival, let's see, what is Wednesday's date?
Wednesday's the 25th.
At 11 a.m., I'm going to be up at Larry Edmonds Bookstore doing a question and answer. So Larry Edmonds, that wonderful, wonderful landmark bookstore. So in case anybody's around early for the festival, I'll be up there at 11 a.m. on Wednesday doing a question and answer about the doc. So, Paul, maybe
okay.
You can come.
Okay, yeah, I'll throw that on our social media. I actually have to, you know what, I actually have another event on Friday. Or on Wednesday. Otherwise,
okay.
I'm so bummed that I would miss that. But I will put that out there I've really been pushing with female directors that I know out here that they need to, with all the movement that's going on, they need to meet someone who's been through it and who's written books about it and who's interviewed people that have been through it and blacklisted actresses. And so, yeah, I've been, the show has been, has definitely been pushing side things with the documentary. So thank you for saying that on air so we can make sure and let people know.
Okay. And
so,
thank
excellent.
You for having me.
Oh, of course. Anytime. There's a VIP chair in our studio with your name on it, and it's open. So to close, of course, I will say, safe travel this week, and I literally just cannot wait to see you later this week.
Me too.
Excellent. Well, I will talk to you soon, and have a great day. Do you have any final words?
I just am so happy that you've pushed me and you keep doing the publicity. It's really great because now we've got to find Mary Astor a home. Hopefully TCM would pick her up. Who knows? But, I'm open to anything. It just so happened that TCM was gracious enough to let her be shown, and maybe people in the audience will have some connections and we can get her put on a network so people can see her.
Yeah, well, maybe you can use it to turn it into a deal festival.
That's right.
Yeah, well, why not?
I'll use your influence.
Yeah, you never know who's watching. It's like my grandma used to say, you never know who's listening, so don't say something unless you want it to be heard. So,
right.
Well, excellent, and it was great talking with you today, and I'm just so excited. And,
me too. I'll see you soon.
Take care, and you have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Oh, the admiration, love, and respect I have for Alexa. So fantastic. Please, female filmmakers, put this in the female filmmaking groups. Let the LA filmmakers know. I always tell everyone, don't make it too crowded because I need a seat. But please, I've already posted this book. This is an important doc reflecting a time that's led to where we're at. It's the theme of women and just what women go through. So please support this, support TCM. And remember, as much as we have to look towards the future, we do have to continue to respect the past. As always, you know my sign-off, whether it's morning, afternoon, or evening, or whatever the other time of day you can find, make sure and watch a good movie. Aloha.